Blog Talk Radio. Serve the underserved communities, We are a voice of the voices, and we always going to speak truth to the powerful and the powerless. Today, agenda entails, what is freedom? Give me something to think about. Susan with Black Mini Facts. We discuss that theme, what our future may look like. And we'll close the program out with a message from Alex to the community. And of course, we share something with you about how you can support MPH Radio. So welcome back again. This is the voice of MPH Radio. We're going to get started with this program by asking you to take out a pen or a pencil and some paper. And we want to give you something to think about. And that thing you think about is, we want to think about the concept of freedom. What is freedom? Freedom is something that men and women have fought over, they have died over, and they continue to die over. So I think it's an important concept for us to get a grasp on what do we mean by freedom, the word freedom. And for us, we'll give you a working definition. And you tell us how it fits into your reality. We say freedom is having the abilities and means to control those necessities for life. Let me repeat that. Freedom is having the abilities and means to control those necessities for life. And how does that concept fit into your reality? Just want to give you a little something to think about. Right now, we're going to turn the mic over to Susie, and she can share with you some MPH Black Mini Facts from the 10th to the 16th of this month. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Hi, sorry for that technical problem. I'll be giving you the Black Mini Facts from the AAPRP/ARPGC. And they'll start with the 10th of November, and they're coming out of the November 1992 calendar. It's the UN Resolution 3379 declares Zionism is racism. And this was in 1975. On the 11th, we have Rhodesia proclaims independence, UDI, from Britain in order to maintain apartheid-like settler colonialism, 1965. And also on that day, we had Angola independent after 11 years of struggle, and that was in 1975. On the 13th, we had the Liberty Party, first anti-slavery political party organized in Warsaw, New York in 1839. On the 15th, we had the Berlin Conference of European Powers and U.S. meet to divide up Africa. The scramble for Africa intensifies. The PLO proclaims independence for Palestinian states in 1988. And on the 16th, we had police murder two African students at Southern University, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, during peaceful demonstration in 1972. I've just given you a few Black Mini Facts for the month of November. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan, for your MPH Black Mini Facts. What we'll do right now, we'll take a quick station break, and when we come back, we're going to introduce our host. We're going to introduce our guest today, Sister Brenda Coles, tell you a little something about her. And then we're going to give her the floor so she can get on down so our people can get on up. We'll be right back. This is MPH Radio. We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. Before we took our break, we told you we'll be coming with our sister's clothes. But we got one more little appetizer we want to share with you, and then she'll be on live. What we're going to do, just to give you a backdrop of the nature of this program as we talk about what our future may look like after this recent election, we'd like to go back down to memory lane, historically, back in 1956. Well, there was an essay that was written by W.E.B. Du Bois, Why I Won't Vote. We're going to play a few minutes of this particular clipping, and then we'll come on with our special guest so we can give it just some kind of context in terms of where we have been and possibly where we are going. So right now, let's just listen to what Du Bois had to say, why he won't vote back in 1956.
Essay, Why I Won't Vote, W.E.B. Du Bois, 1956. Editors, The Black Agenda Review. November 6, 2024. I believe that democracy has so far disappeared in the United States that no two evils exist. There is but one evil party with two names, and it will be elected despite all I can do or say. It is the day after the 2024 U.S. presidential elections and the people of the U.S. lost. For what choice did they have? On one side was Kamala Harris, sitting vice president of a regime in the middle of committing genocide and administering the massive repression of anti-genocide protesters, who was undemocratically chosen after a Democratic Party coup kept the sitting president from running. She offered to continue the path of genocide and war, with a promise to create world's most lethal military. On the other side was Donald Trump, who is as much a buffoon as he is dangerous. He matched the Democrats' openly racist hatred of Palestinian people with his own racist hatred of Palestinians, Puerto Ricans, and Haitians. Significantly, Trump sounded less hawkish than Harris. There were other options, of course. We were not supposed to know about the Green Party, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, or the People's Party. We were also not supposed to know that both of the major genocidal corporate parties have worked for decades to prevent the rise of any third party. The Democrats have been especially egregious, lying, cheating, suing to remove the Green Party from the presidential race. Many people in the United States did not vote because they understood what W.E.B. Du Bois understood almost 70 years ago, that in the U.S., No Two Evils Exist. In an essay titled Why I Won't Vote, published in The Nation in 1956, Dubois wrote, "There is but one evil party with two names, and it will be elected despite all I can do or say." Many people also saw, as Dubois did, that third parties have been given no opportunity to take part in the campaign and explain its platform or would be called communist or Russiabots in today's parlance. For years, Dubois had tried to vote for third parties, for socialist parties, for communist parties, for the lesser evil of the two racist parties, only to come to the exasperated conclusion that the U.S. was too far gone and that voting in the United States was essentially pointless. For Dubois, the refusal to vote was not defeatist. It was, instead, a call to action, a call to hope. If 25 million voters refrained from voting in 1956, he wrote, this might make the American people ask how much longer this dumb farce can proceed without even a whimper of protest. This is the hope that we should all have, the hope that folks will understand that a vote for either of the twin evils is a vote for corporate control, white supremacist inequality, war, and genocide, the hope that the idea of U.S. democracy will be revealed as the dumb farce that it is. We reprint W.E.B. Dubois' essay Why I Won't Vote below. Why I Won't Vote. W.E.B. Dubois. Since I was 21 in 1889, I have in theory followed the voting plan strongly advocated by Sidney Lenz in The Nation of August 4th, i.e., voting for a third party even when its chances were hopeless, if the main parties were unsatisfactory, or, in absence of a third choice, voting for the lesser of two evils. My action, however, had to be limited by the candidate's attitude toward Negroes. Of my adult life, I have spent 23 years living and teaching in the South, where my voting choice was not asked. I was disfranchised by law or administration. In the North, I lived in all 32 years, covering 8 presidential elections. In 1912, I wanted to support Theodore Roosevelt, but his Bull Moose convention dodged the Negro problem and I tried to help elect Wilson as a liberal Southerner. Under Wilson came the worst attempt at Jim Crow legislation and discrimination in civil service that we had experienced since the Civil War. In 1916, I took Hughes as the lesser of two evils. He promised Negroes nothing and kept his word. In 1920, I supported Harding because of his promise to liberate Haiti. In 1924, I voted for La Follette, although I knew he could not be elected. In 1928, Negroes faced absolute dilemma. Neither Hoover nor Smith wanted the Negro vote and both publicly insulted us. I voted for Norman Thomas and the Socialists, although the Socialists had attempted to Jim Crow Negro members in the South. In 1932, I voted for Franklin Roosevelt, since Hoover was unthinkable and Roosevelt's attitude toward workers most realistic. I was again in the South from 1934 until 1944. Technically, I could vote, but the election in which I could vote was a farce. The real election was the white primary. Retired for age in 1944, I returned to the North and found a party to my liking. In 1948, I voted the progressive ticket for Henry Wallace and in 1952 for Vincent Hallinan. In 1956, I shall not go to the polls. I have not registered. I believe that democracy has so far disappeared in the United States that no two evils exist. There is but one evil party with two names, and it will be elected despite all I can do or say. There is no third party. On the presidential ballot in a few states, 17 in 1952, a socialist party will appear. Few will hear its appeal because it will have almost no opportunity to take part in the campaign and explain its platform. If a voter organizes or advocates a real third party movement, he may be accused of seeking to overthrow this government by force and violence. Anything he advocates by way of significant reform will be called communist and will of necessity be communist in the sense that it must advocate such things as government ownership of the means of production, government in business, the limitation of private profit, social medicine, government housing, and federal aid to education, the total abolition of race bias, and the welfare state. These things are on every communist program, These things are the aim of socialism. Any American who advocates them today, no matter how sincerely, stands in danger of losing his job, surrendering his social status, and perhaps landing in jail. The witnesses against him may be liars or insane or criminals. These witnesses need give no proof for their charges and may not even be known or appear in person. They may be in the pay of the United States government. A.D.A.S. and liberals are not third parties. They seek to act as tails to kites. But since the kites are self-propelled and radar-controlled, tails are quite superfluous and rather silly. The present administration is carrying on the greatest preparation for war in the history of mankind. Stevenson promises to maintain or increase this effort. The weight of our taxation is unbearable and rests mainly and deliberately on the poor. This administration is dominated and directed by wealth and for the accumulation of wealth. It runs smoothly like a well-organized industry and should do so because industry runs it for the benefit of industry. Corporate wealth profits as never before in history. We turn over the national resources to private profit and have few funds left for education, health, or housing. Our crime, especially juvenile crime, is increasing. Its increase is perfectly logical. For a generation we have been teaching our youth to kill, destroy, steal, and rape in war. What can we expect in peace? We let men take wealth which is not theirs. If the seizure is legal, we call it high profits, and the profiteers help decide what is legal. If the theft is illegal, the thief can fight it out in court, with excellent chances to win if he receives the accolade of the right newspapers. Gambling in home, church, and on the stock market is increasing and all prices are rising. It costs three times his salary to elect a senator and many millions to elect a president. This money comes from the very corporations which today are the government. This in a real democracy would be enough to turn the party responsible out of power. Yet this we cannot do. The other party has surrendered all party differences in foreign affairs, and foreign affairs are our most important affairs today and take most of our taxes. Even in domestic affairs, how does Stevenson differ from Eisenhower? He uses better English than Dulles, thank God. He has a sly humor, where Eisenhower has none. Beyond this, Stevenson stands on the race question in the South, not far from where his godfather Adlai stood 63 years ago, which reconciles him to the South. He has no clear policy on war or preparation for war, on water and flood control, on reduction of taxation, on the welfare state. He wavers on civil rights and his party blocks civil rights in the Senate until Douglas of Illinois admitted that the Democratic Senate would and could stop even the right of senators to vote. Douglas had a right to complain. 3 million voters sent him to the Senate to speak for them. His voice was drowned and his vote nullified by Eastland, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who was elected by 151,000 voters. This is the democracy in the United States which we peddle abroad. Negroes hope to muster 400,000 votes in 1956. Where will they cast them? What have the Republicans done to enforce the education decision of the Supreme Court? What they advertised as fair employment was exactly nothing, and Nixon was just the man to explain it. What has the administration done to rescue Negro workers, the most impoverished group in the nation, half of whom receive less than half the median wage of the nation, while the nation sends billions abroad to protect oil investments and help employ slave labor in the Union of South Africa and the Rhodesias? Very well, and will the party of Talmadge, Eastland, and Ellender do better than the Republicans if the Negroes return them to office? I have no advice for others in this election. Are you voting Democratic? Well and good. All I ask is what? Are you voting for Eisenhower and his smooth team of bright ghost writers? Again, what? Will your helpless vote either way support or restore democracy to America? Is the...
Welcome to MPH Radio. You're listening to an essay that was done in 1956. Why Would I Vote? By W.E.B. Du Bois, which is just a backdrop of what is taking place in 2024, where this whole process of election, democracy, and since this election has taken place, It has many underserved communities concerned about what their future may look like. Now, Brother Malcolm once stated that history is best to reward those who research. Listen to Brother W.E.B. Du Bois' dissertation. It sounds like you were living today at today's time. And we would like to have a discussion day with our special guest, Sister Brenda Coles, who has been a four-decade advocacy of civil rights. She's a community activist. She's a freedom fighter for justice and equality. So this sister has been around a long time. I don't know how she got this longevity to have that discipline for decades of advocacy and civil rights. But we are honored to have her on this program where she can help us fill out this missing page of history as relates to what our future may look like in the year 2024 or beyond. So at this point in time, we'd like to bring Sister Brenda in and welcome her to MPH Radio. Welcome, Sister Brenda, to Missing Page of History Radio.
Hi, Mr. Robinson. Thank you for allowing me to be on Missing Pages in History today. I am certainly grateful for your invitation to talk about such a very important topic of what our future may look like in a Donald Trump regime.
You know, Sister Brenda, Du Bois mentioned many issues and problems that African people have been having back during this time. And it seems to be the same problem today. He made the argument that he sees no fundamental difference between the two parties. What I want you to do is just give me your general response to what you just heard from him. And then I just want you to give your own perspective on and some ideas and thoughts that you have on what can we expect in the future? What do you think our future will look like? But first, just give us your assessment on the conditions that he viewed in 1956 and the similarities of the conditions that our communities and people and our people are facing today in 2024.
Well, as I listened to the dissertation of W.E.B. Du Bois, I have not always agreed with W.E.B. Du Bois. And I was born in the early 60s. And so I certainly remember when, you know, when my growing up with my family, when it came to living in America and what that looked like for my family and my community. And I think, first of all, we always got to start with community. I did listen to what he said of, you know, one, the question, why are you voting? First of all, I think that, first of all, you got to, you know, for me personally, I vote because there are too many of my forefathers, my brothers and sisters that have fought and died to give me that right to vote. We had, and when it came to, when he said that the party, and I may be mistaken, as far as overthrowing the government, the only party that threatened of overthrowing the government is the Republican Party. You know, there was, you know, talk about the genocide. I don't agree what is going on, and I don't agree with going on in Gaza or and across the country. I certainly don't agree. And when you look at the pictures of those children, but the problem is that when you have Israel that have made a decision of what they are going to do. Should the United States stand by that? I don't agree with that. Okay, that's not something that I agree with. If when you're saying people that should not be killed, especially by any of our equipment that is going over there, okay? I don't agree with that part of it, absolutely not. I also don't agree, which I think that this is something that we got to understand. When you have countries that do in fact harbor, and because it's just like they don't say anything either because they are afraid for their families. So they do harbor people that under their hospitals and under their under their homes, and they harbor people, and you got a lot of people in these countries that know about it, but they don't say anything. Okay? They don't do anything. And as long as they don't say anything and they don't do anything. And then when something like this happens, it all goes back in the finger pointing starts. Well, it's everybody. It's their country too. They didn't stand up either. They didn't stand up and fight. They didn't stand up and say anything. So, I mean, and I see it like that. It's no different than over here. It's the same thing. It's all over the world. You got people that will not stand up for their rights. You got people that will not stand up and fight. You got people that will not stand up and speak out. You got people that will not even vote for their own interests or living in a different time. We are not living, and I do understand when WDE boys talk about the Green Party. They're out there. They're known. If you don't know who was running outside of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, then that's on you. Technology today is right in your hand. And the excuses, you continue to hear, we don't need to hear it. I don't want to hear it because it's right in our hands today. I know who is running outside of that. You know why? Because just like, for instance, Cornel West, which is actually a friend, when I was at the Democratic National Convention, he was there too. Him and Tavis Smiley, right there together. As a matter of fact, I'm in a picture with him. So, you know, it's a process. And what I think that need to happen is the money need to come out of politics, because it's about the money that you raise. It really is. And that's one of the... And I've been working in politics just as long as I've been working in civil rights. It's about the money that you raise in politics. So let's not get it twisted about the Republican Party. Because first of all, one thing we better understand, the Democratic Party is a party that, and it may not start it this way, but over the decades, they are the party when it comes to helping those that are disadvantaged. The Democratic Party is that party, not the Republican Party. They could care less about you. No party is going to be perfect. Now, if you want to sit at home and not vote, then guess what? This is how I feel about you. You don't have a voice. I'm gonna give you an example, Mr. Robinson. When I was in Chicago at the DNC, it was a brother that approached me. He was when I was buying some shirts, and he was so me buying shirts, and he started making comments. He was a, I got to ask you, we were CNN. He had a badge on for CNN. And he was, he actually did logistics for CNN. And he was talking to me about the, you know, the you know, all the border. And I said to him, wait a minute, bro. You know, what Joe Biden done about the border. Hold up. Let's go back. Donald Trump had 4 years. First of all, he came in an escalator. Let's go back on that. I had to stop him. See, this is what we don't do. We don't correct people and have them answer the question first. Don't come with me. Don't come in my face about what Joe Biden did. Google it. Because I can read, I can tell you what Joe Biden did, even for you. Even for you. While you, and then he was, and I said, so let me ask you a question. Where is that wall? For 4 years, Donald Trump was president. Remember that now. So where is that wall that he was, that impenetrable wall that he was going to build and have Mexico pay for it? I said, so tell me, oh, he won. Oh, no. Let's talk about the wall. Where is it at? So he couldn't answer the, well, yeah, you got that. And then I said, but let's not forget the next millions that they then suckered people to give them to build that wall, where they built a little small piece of wall. They did nothing, and they kept rest of the money out of the same people that couldn't afford it. Because, let's be very clear, the highest recipients of public gets public service, food stamps, welfare, are white folk, not us. And so, after speaking to this brother's gonna then tell me, "Well, I don't vote anyway." Then I say, then what do you have to say? You ain't got nothing to say. But then he said, you just go on back. I said, when you come to Virginia, look me up. He said, this is what he said to me. You from Virginia? Virginia? I thought you were from Southside Chicago. Well, I said, brother, what does that mean? You assumed that I was from Southside Chicago. So you ask me, Virginia, what does that mean when you say that? Because I'm not going to assume. I want you to tell me. What are you trying to say? But see, he didn't answer that question. So we got to be very, we got to understand and be very careful about what it is that we understand that has actually happened or has been happening. Now, during that time of W.E.B. Du Bois, I can understand things change, times has changed. We are living in a reality of we got to live here in this crap. And that's how I see it. So when we got to live here, let's at least have enough common sense to try to understand what it all means to us, what is in our best interest, what it is that we need to do as a community to ensure that we are getting what is in our best interest. Now, when it comes to the other parties that want to run, nobody tells them they can't run. Ain't nobody tell them that. Ain't nobody shut them out. No, they didn't. It's not that they didn't have a platform. They didn't get on the platform with the Democrats and Republicans because that wasn't. Let me tell you something. Don't pretend like we shut them out. We didn't shut them out. Black folk did. Because if they didn't get a certain percentage, then they're not going to get on that platform. But if they did, they will. And that has happened. That has happened for decades. But if they get less than that percentage to put them on that platform, their vote is going to the Republicans. Simple as that. right here in Virginia, Cornell West got almost 9,000 votes. It didn't go towards a Democrat. It went to the Republican. So when they do, when any other party does run, and they can run, anybody can stop them from running. Might stop them talking about that platform. All these people that you're talking about, they have means to get on any platform they want. They get on any other time. So that's not true. That's not true today. That was true during that time of era. But that's not true today. But let me say something that was very true today. Do you know there was 10 million registered Democrats that did not vote in this election? 10 million Democrats that did not vote in this election. So let's talk about what that's going to look like. Now, if you got any questions for me, if somebody's chiming in to want to, well, I definitely want to call in. We certainly want people to call in. And let's talk about this, because I really don't think what people understand, and I want to get back to some basics, because what I have learned being a grassroots person on the ground that understand the temperature when it comes to people everyday lives. See, I deal with those that have family members that have been murdered, hanged, found shot 6-7 times in the back. These are the cases I get. They lost their homes. They lost their children. Their children are dead. I mean, I'm talking about their babies. And their grown folk, their grown kids are also babies. So, you know, but I'm talking about, you know, even little ones. Talking about people that have to go to court for custody. I mean, it could be anything, but I am the person that is dealing with these cases. I've been dealing with these cases for decades. I am the one that when your family member or your loved one is in trouble, I am the one that you are calling. I don't care if you're calling a national organization, because I have been with National Network, Reverend Helen Sharpton. I've worked with the NAACP years ago. I have worked with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference years ago. On a community level, a state level, and a national level. And still on a national level. I've been campaigning and working in politics for decades. I'm not a lawyer, I'm an activist. But do I work, or I work alongside lawyers as an activist? Absolutely. And so these are cases. So I'm not just talking about the fact, I want to get back to some basics, and I want people to understand clearly. I'm very country. I grew up in the country. I had 9 other brothers and sisters. My father died before I was born, so all I knew was my mother. I had a very strong mother. She was a nurse, which at time she was an LPN. We had a garden, fruit trees. Only time Mama went to the store was to get milk. Everything else we ate out gardens. We picked from the trees. I didn't even have a bathroom. We didn't even have a bathroom in my house till I was 7 years old. So let's really get down to the get down, because a lot of you, even with me being in my 60s, a lot of you that's older than me can't even say that lived in the city. That's unheard of for you. KKKs walk down the street on a regular. because I came from a real small country town in Virginia, back up in the mountains. We couldn't go nowhere by ourselves. We got spit on when the buses went by. So let's really get down to the get down. Because we got so many people complaining and don't even understand that, first of all, if we don't start understanding what our future are going to look like with a Donald Trump regime, then, and you're not voting, or you don't care, or you don't think it matters, or you don't think it's going to apply to you, then I feel for you. I feel sorry for you. And then I tell people, don't call me. Because, see, the work that I do, it's for free. That's my time. If you really, it's not when, it's not if, it's when. It's not if, but it's when. That's the bottom line. And when it happens to folk, and they've never been involved, and they don't know what to do, and all they're looking for is some justice, it hits them then, and it never should hit us just then. We should always be ready. And if you don't get ready now, you're never going to be ready. Thank you for, I went way out. I do apologize. So I went and listened to WED Du Bois, and then you asked that question. What I want to start with is this, because we got to go back, and I got to help people understand one thing. And I wanted people to understand a little bit about my background, because I think when you understand that you got somebody that's coming from very, very, very humble background, and that we didn't, I used to think we was poor. No, we wasn't. We weren't poor. I thought we were. No, we wasn't. We lived well. I didn't realize that till now. I realized that a long time ago, but we lived well. And this is where I say we got to get back to basis of understanding how all of this actually works. And where I would just really want to start with, because we're talking about the election, and I want to start with, and I want people to understand one thing. When an election happens, when the incoming president, the incoming president is not the president that you look at that have done the work as of yet. It was the outgoing president. So when people say that Donald Trump that they did better under Donald Trump's economy, you did not do better under Donald Trump's economy. You did better under President Barack Obama's economy. Donald Trump inherited President Obama's great economy. President Obama inherited George Bush's recession. And in 8 years, he pulled us out of recession, and Donald Trump inherited it. So that's why you was doing so well. You did well under President Obama. You didn't do well under Donald Trump. Donald Trump took us back into a recession. Let's stop forgetting what happened with Donald Trump. You had millions of people that died because Donald Trump refused to listen that there was a virus, and he knew a year prior that was coming to our shores, and all he called it was a cold. So I'm sure that most people, especially elderly people, even young people that know somebody that have died from that COVID, hospitals was not prepared. at all. Not at all. I know that for a fact. I never had COVID one time. I went into St. Mary's Hospital because I lost blood and I passed out. I had lost a tremendous amount of blood. I had to have 4 pints of blood. I was losing blood as they was giving me blood. I had a bleeding ulcer. They had to put me on a COVID floor with COVID patients and to test me for COVID before they could do surgery on me. I came back negative for COVID. They never cleaned that room. That room stank. The nurses, and I kid you not, I was in that hospital for 4 days. I was in the hospital for 8 days. For at least 3 to 4 days. I kid you not. When they were switching over from one nurse to another, this is exactly what they said. Mrs. Coles is blind in her left eye and she's deaf. And I'm like, hello? Hello? They were so shorthanded. And I did that for days. And I'm like, why are they keep saying this, that I'm blind in my left eye and I'm deaf? They had all types of, because they were so, so shorthanded. They didn't even have space in the hospital to move me off of that COVID floor. I demanded, because I had a voice. I demanded them to get me off of that floor. They could not. When they did surgery, they was taking me back to the COVID floor. They had no space. But I demanded them to clean that room. The supervisors of the hospital came in there to disinfect that room. I refused to go back in there. I told them, leave me in recovery before I go in that room. Do you really think those people up there that was dying that could do that under Donald Trump? The people that lost their homes, do you know how many people that called me because they lost their homes under Donald Trump? People that are still losing their homes under Donald Trump today? Why? Because when that virus hit and government had to stop, this is when Joe Biden came in. When the government has to stop on you, and they have to help you in a recovery, because they have to stop, and then they have to have these people that are renting to you. They can't take you to court, so their bills are piling up, thousands of dollars of their mortgage. See, people don't think about it like that. Their mortgage are now piling up, because I know people that personally that rent to folk, and the amount of mortgage that they had that they still had to try to pay. But they was also out of work. It doesn't just work your way. So people didn't have the money. So they lost homes. That was Donald Trump. That wasn't Joe Biden. You lost your family member. That wasn't Joe Biden. That was Donald Trump. When Donald Trump dropped the tax rate, I helped run a tax office 20 years. You cannot drop the tax rate. Why? Because that little $30, $40 that you was getting extra, guess what? You got to pay it back. Because he just gave you the money that you was paying in taxes. He gave it to you throughout the entire year. You was happy, but now you're going to pay taxes. So see, this year was the last year that all of COVID and the benefits that you got from COVID, it was gone. So those of you that's listening, if you had to pay back a lot of money, it wasn't Joe Biden. It was Donald. This was the first year because of all of the benefits that were gone, this was the first year that Donald Trump's real disastrous tax change went in effect, and people was paying in our office tens of thousands of dollars back. That was Donald Trump. Donald Trump also made it so high where people couldn't even, where you used to be with President Obama, and now Donald Trump's mess is going to expire at the end of this year. So guess what? Next year, you're going to do extremely well on your taxes. Most people should, depending on what you paid, and let me be very clear on that. Depending on what you paid in your federal and your state, you should do well. Now, guess who you're gonna try to say that you did better? You're gonna say Donald Trump? No, it's Joe Biden. Because Donald Trump in March, they already are getting ready to change your tax code again, which is going to be a disaster for you for the following years. I'm trying to make this plain for folks so you can understand. Instead of trying to point your finger. And one of the things that aggravated me the most are black folk going around saying, Donald Trump wrote me a check. Donald Trump ain't wrote you no check. Every president gives a stimulus check. Every president. Donald Trump was the only narcissist that put his name on the check. The check comes from the Treasury office. That's taxpayers' dollars. That's my money that wrote you a check. That's your taxpayers. Even brothers incarcerated. Donald Trump wrote me a check. Brother, you incarcerated. You got a check. Shut up. Donald Trump didn't write you a check. Please tell your incarcerated brothers and sisters, Donald Trump didn't write them a check. That came from the Department of Treasury. That dumb put his name on it. Any president could have did that. But they're not narcissists to do that. I want you to really understand how that works. So Donald Trump tanked this country and put it back into a recession. And that's just a little bit. I'm only giving you a little bit of that part. Because we ain't got about an hour left.
Don't worry about the time, sister. Don't worry about the time. We're going to get the information out to the people. Speak your truth.
That's right. And see, he now is getting ready to inherit the best recovery in history. I don't care what you say about the groceries or the gas. Donald Trump put you in a bad state, not Joe Biden. You are getting ready. Donald Trump is getting ready to inherit the best economy in history. Okay, look at all these people on vacation. They complain about gas and food. Look at the number of people that's been able to go on vacation. When last time you been able to go on vacation? It was years. You couldn't go on vacation. You couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't drive. You couldn't do nothing. You couldn't work. You had to work from home. People did get creative. That was the greatest thing that came out of it. And the only thing. But guess what? Our kids failed. Our children failed. And drastically failed. Because they had to do school at home. That was Donald Trump. Let's not forget that, people. And now we got them voted back into office. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, black folk. And anybody else that's listening. Let me tell you something. He have appointed to Health and Human Services, which oversees your Medicaid, your Medicare, Your food industry in this country. Nutrition for your kids, school, it goes on and on and on. He put John F. Kennedy. I mean Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I take that up to, let me make that correction. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And of course, we do know that he is the son, who his father is. But it doesn't mean anything. He's not his dad. He's not his dad. He's him own self. And he's crazy. He is a noted anti-vaccine activist. He don't believe in good nutrition in the schools. He don't believe in obesity. Black children today have the high, we are the highest population, our children have the highest population of obesity. The highest population of obesity is our children. But he don't believe in that. All of that's going to be dismantled. And don't forget I just said Medicaid and Medicare. Medicare and Medicaid. We got seniors. You better take note of that. We got low-income families. You better take note of that. 10 million. I'm going to repeat it. 10 million registered Democrats did not vote for your interests. Donald Trump is putting in office. I'm just going to read a couple of the office that I feel that you need to understand that not understanding that you want to talk about the border. Okay. All right. Let me ask you a question. Let's talk about that for a minute. You worried about immigrants. Immigrants goes to the field and work because you ain't going to do it. Immigrants work in these hotels and do the housekeeping and everything. You ain't going to do it. And they get paid a little bit money. You ain't going to do it. Immigrants out here working in these yards and these lawns. You ain't going to do it. Do you know how many times I have called folk up? Because one of my jobs is hiring. All I do is interview and hire and onboard. Oh, I'm going to get some answer. I don't want it. Mm-mm, you don't want it. You ain't going to do it. But guess what? When I got somebody coming in that is Hispanic and in their country, listen to this. In their country, guess what? They lawyers and doctors. And I do wish I was joking. I don't care where they're coming from, what country they're coming from. Lawyers, doctors, that's what they are in their country. And they take whatever they can get. And guess what? They got the lowest number of crime. All they're trying to do is provide, just like us. And y'all worried about the border. Because guess what? When they get deported, 23 million, rather they documented or undocumented immigrants in this country. And are they going to be able to do that at one time? No. But have they already started? You're damn skipping. Excuse me. I apologize. They've already started.
Hey, Sister Brenda. Let's take a station break and announcement, and when we come back, we'll continue the discussion, and we're going to open up our phone lines to those who like to contribute and get their perspectives of what they heard and the theme of what our future may look like. Dial 818-337-0016, and please hit 1, and we will acknowledge you. So we're going to open up when we come back, and you're listening to MPH Radio. They got us all on the front line.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
PSA, then we'll get back with our discussion with our special guest, Sister Brenda Coles. We want to alert our listening audience. This is an important event coming up on the 21st of this week in Richmond, Virginia. If you're in the area, we'll definitely encourage you to come out and check out this program. It's a program that can deal with soul questions, your history, and question and its relationship of slavery to reparations. So just listen to this message and then we'll come back and continue our discussion. Again, if you have any comments or questions, please call in at 818-337-0016. Hit 1 and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. Let's hear this information and we'll be right back.
Come and meet David Montero in Richmond, Virginia. Author, The Stolen Wealth of Slavery, A Case for Reparations, Free Admission, Join Us. Copyright Ben Stork. About the author. David Montero has documented the impact of corruption in South and Southeast Asia. Formerly a correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor and a regular producer for PBS's flagship investigative series, Frontline, his work has twice been honored with an Emmy Award nomination, as well as the South Asian Journalists Association's Daniel Pearl Award. Montero has also written for The New York Times, The Nation, Le Monde Diplomatique, and many others. Be a leader. The Stolen Wealth of Slavery is my deep investigation to follow the trail of the massive wealth amassed by Northern corporations throughout America's history of enslavement. Throughout, I wrestle with pervasive myths that will be a revelation to many. Most white Southern enslavers were not rich. Many were barely making ends meet, with Northern businesses benefiting the most from bondage-based profits. My hope is that this book will tell a new story about slavery, one showing that its epic wealth was not limited to the South, nor to plantations, nor to a certain period of time, but is instead all around us. For those who truly profited from slavery built our largest banks and corporations, corporations that are the living vessel of viciously stolen wealth that still survives. I also hope my book, by exposing the role of corporations in slavery, can jumpstart a conversation that corporations have a tremendous debt to pay to Black people through reparations. I also hope that if you enjoy reading, you will tell a friend or 10 and share your thoughts on social media. Special thanks. Richmond Public Library /RPL, PA Roots, MPH TV and Radio. For contact info and RSVP to missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com, missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com, or call 804-683-9174 if you're planning to attend this reception. The doors will open at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. MPH, thank you. Event, reception, book lunch, and signing. Venue, Richmond Public Library Auditorium, 101 East Franklin Street, Richmond, Virginia, 23219. Date, Thursday, November 21st, 2024. Time, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Host, Missing Pages of History Incorporated /MPH Inc.
You heard it, so the event is on the 21st. There's this upcoming Thursday. Come and support this program by MPH, Missing Pages of History. So let's get back to our discussion before we went on our break. Our sister Brenda was giving her perspectives as related to our theme, what our future may look like. We have a loaded board right now. People been waiting here patiently to make their comments. We ask you to keep the comments about down to 2 minutes or less. But right now, we're going to bring in our co-host. We're going to bring in Brother Alex. Brother Alex, your thoughts, what our future may look like. The mic is yours.
Well, Brother Lee, you know, I don't know how many times I'm going to have to tell you. You know how to bring in the people that mean the most. This, and I would say queen. Because we call kings and queens, you know, we give them a little respect. But I'll say that this queen today, this black queen, has gave us some knowledge here. And I have been entertained with information and facts. And that's the most important truth, because I've been listening to lies and mistruths for maybe 10 years up under different administrations. It didn't matter who it was. But a bunch of lies and misinformation, you know, from both sides. But I've never heard so many come from one side now more than the other. So the sister was on direct point in her information, in her delivery, and in her response to make us aware of what's going on as far as the article in Du Bois Time that we have to realize. That, yes, that was another generation, many generations before us. Different things were going on. But a lot of the concepts, yeah, are still the same. We are still in a struggle. Our people are still trying to survive in this, as she said, crap of a country. So when we try and move forward, and every step we take is being blocked, we're putting chains on our minds, our conceptions of what we can do and where we can go and who we can become. I remember that. Yes, sister, myself. you know, born in a segregated hospital, going to a segregated school, and also from a family of 14 siblings. So when we look at where we have to go forward to even achieve, and I've never considered it an American dream. I just considered it the rest of my life. My plan for success, my goal to move forward. That's what I always considered. What can I do to benefit myself first, my community second, my family of man third? Because the nation may change hands. It may come and go. But my family and myself will always be the same. Who I am, my character, my morality will remain the same. I have never changed since anyone that knew me from grade school to now. I love my people. That's first of all. I love my people even more when they go out and vote. I love my people even more when they go out and buy a home. I love my people more when they go out and get a job to work. I love my people more when they seek health care when they need it. There are so many people in this world that we'll never see as being a equal. We can't walk around with shades on and believe that everything's going to be perfect in this life. It never will be. Because we have been designated a color of race. And that race that many look upon is at the bottom of the pillar. We're not midway. We're not close to the top. Many people today look at us as being at the very bottom of society. And as long as we are trampled on and lies are perpetuated, misinformation is given, and we are called low IQ, when we're called lazy, all these different wolf whistles to determine how well we will succeed in society, we have to recognize who those people are. And when we vote against our best interests, and it's important to vote because that's what this country is set upon. Yes, we're in a capitalist society. We're not going to change that by tomorrow. We're not going to make it a socialist or communist country. That's not going to happen right now. But the country can be destroyed and things can be even worse. What are the two sides of it being worst, you know, for the African American? As those Africans were coming across the water on those ships many years ago, a lot of them didn't even foresee a future. They went ahead at the first opportunity and jumped. A lot of them even killed themselves by starving themselves to death. Some of them even strangled each other to death on those ships because they did not want to come to this place. Think about it. We got millions of people that have came into the United States as immigrants and see this as a great country. But the Africans who came here in chains saw the horrors of America in the bowels of those ships. They can never feel what our ancestors felt. They'll never go through what our ancestors felt. But yet and still, when we go out and try and talk to these young people today, and even some of the old people today, about standing up for your rights, it was the hardest thing for me to get people to get out and march and protest because they just figured the same old would be the same old. No, we got a lot of things done in the 60s. We had more to do in the 70s, even greater things in the 80s. We took a step back in the 90s. We double stepped back in the 2000s. We triple stepped back in 2020 and beyond. So we're going backwards. We ain't going forward. We are going backwards. And our mentality that we are accomplishing something is all a farce. So I want to go back and listen to her talk again, because it was just so inspiring from somebody that knows and try and go out and help the people. That's why I did Why Vote 2020 and Why Vote 2024, to inspire the people in South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, Louisiana. And my people looked at me like, why should I even try? And I gave them 200 reasons why you should vote. But I doubt if a third of them went to the polls. So we got a lot of work here to do, whether you're voting for independents, Democrats, or Republicans. We got to tell the truth about every party's platform and what they intend to do. Because if you think for a moment that the lies that have been perpetrated by one party this year, that they're going to do anything for you, you just as crazy as they are. So, again, I hand this back over to you, Mr. Lee, and I thank you for the guest today. She has been a blessing for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Alex. You're going to call us 6057. We'd like to thank you for your patience. What contribution would you like to make to today's program around the theme, what our future may look like, and what you may have just listened to? Call us 6057. The mic is yours.
Thanks for having me. Revolutionary greetings to you, Brother Alex, and your special guest, Sister Brenda. Let's see, my comment on what she said, which I found very enlightening and informative, is that the speed to why a lot of Africans did not vote in this election is because possibly they felt neither party represented their interests. Of course, the Republicans claim to represent the wealthy, and Democrats claim to represent the middle class. Well, most Africans in the U.S. do not belong to the middle class, and that was why they probably felt neither party represented them. And I think that's why, there were a lot of people that didn't vote. And it's a telling stat that 10 million people that purport to be Democrats did not vote, which is significant because it would have made the race a little closer than what it turned out to be. And I think the key over voting is we need permanent political organization. We need to form our own political parties that represent our interests, and and not depend upon the capitalist duopoly, because they do not represent our interests, and that's clear all throughout history. A lot of people forget that the Democratic Party was the party of the slaveocracy. In other words, a lot of slave owners and plantation owners belong to and supported the Democratic Party. People forget that because our history is not properly or adequately taught in the public school system. But, I think a key factor is that we must be permanently organized so that we actually have a choice to vote for when these elections come about.
Thank you, caller 6057. Let's go to caller. Let's try caller. Your last four numbers are 4636. Caller 4636. You have any comments or questions you'd like to ask? 4636. The mic is yours. Caller 4636. Any comments, questions? Okay, let's try caller 8445. Caller 8445. Any comments or questions or what else you should be look like to you? Caller 8445. The mic's yours.
Yes, sir. Thank you. If you can hear me, Miss Brenda was amazing. Okay, thank you, Miss Brenda Coles. I've known quite a while. Her and her son Elijah. They're amazing activists and people and supporters of our community, our African-American community. Ms. Brenda spoke very well, as usual. You would have to know her, and to know her is to love her. She has a heart, a huge heart for the work that she's doing. I won't be long. My name is Donald Robinson. I represent an organization called Latino Enrichment Network here in our region. And she has supported us, her and her son has supported us for several years, since 2016. But as we talk about this whole thing with voting, wow. I feel like a lot of the other communities have reinvented themselves, and we have not. I think we have to take a step in a right direction for solutions. And in solution building, we definitely have to come up with a way, because we all to make people understand what's at stake. But in this generation, our generation is different from a lot of us, what we went through. As I talk to the youth, they'll listen to what we talk about from the past, but a lot of them can't relate to it. They don't understand what we're talking about and the fight and the struggle. So the thing is to get people to get out and vote. I think we have to reinvent what we do to make people understand what's at stake, because a lot of people today, a lot of people that put that guy in the White House, they were black and brown. A lot of them just flipped the switch and went over there and voted. If that's what you want to do, but where is what's attractive for them to still be with us? They don't understand is my point. Some of the young folks, some of the colleges, some of the people I spoke to, some of the college kids were so excited to vote this time. I talked to a young girl who was her first time voting the day before she voted. And when I went back to the restaurant, her and her Korean family, they were in tears. I was like, man, get your head up. You'll be all right. This ain't the first fight. But she was upset. But she thought, what did I think wrong? Am I thinking wrong as an adult? Why did so many other people vote that way? So with that, I think we got to do more education and come up with ways to make people understand what's at stake, which we do well. But again, I think we have to reinvent what we're doing. I think some of the old school areas and antics and some of the things that we do to talk to people to get them out to vote, it just don't work. Because like Brenda said, look at how many people didn't vote. But boy, when you go to barbershop, when you go to different places that you visit on the weekends, it was so much chatter, supposedly in like they were going to vote. And then like Brenda said, as soon as you ask them, you registered, they don't even know how. They're above 50. So I don't know about blaming it on everybody else, but all this talking and not doing anything about it, I'm just not with it. So I think we need more action. And in order to do that, my ministry is working with the young folks and making sure they come around and understand what we're doing and what life is about, and didn't know that they have options. And when we show kids and adults what the options are way before election time come on, let's don't wait till like 120 days and all of this kind of stuff. And, yeah, we're going to jump on a bandwagon and throw a whole lot of parties, but we're not voting. We're not going out. We're just talking, doing a whole lot of talking and having a lot of parties and all that. That's not going to get it done, and that's not respectful to the folks who came before us. So with that, again, thank you, Ms. Brenda, and thank you. I'm a Robinson, you're a Robinson. Let's all have a nice day. Y'all be blessed.
Thank you for your comments, my brother. Let's go to call 4298. 4298. What our future may look like. Your comments, call 4298.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Lee. My name is Robert Moses. Say hello to Alex and Susan and all the guests, everybody that's been on the line. It's been a pleasure listening. I think the dominant sentiment is the correct sentiment. And, you know, this idealism of dogma about Dubois and trying to force that onto the real situation we are faced with is why we're in the situation we're in. Because some people are just not scientific. They don't do a concrete analysis, concrete conditions, and recognize what the real situation is. They think Trump is just like another politician or something. And some people think he's fascist and kept saying he was fascist and warning people that we need to have a united front of the democratic minded, socialist minded, and the communist minded against him. And his reactionary regime. He wants to go back to the Civil War and restore the South and do what Netanyahu is doing, trying to restore the Israel due to the Palestinians, due to us, what Netanyahu is doing to the Palestinians as much as he can, as much as is possible. But we have to dare to resist. We have to resist on all fronts. We have to resist. We have to have the courage to resist. And, you know, we could have nipped this in the bud with a vote. That's the tragedy of it all. We don't have the political consciousness, the awareness. It takes awareness to really have socialism and communism and democracy even. It takes political awareness. You have to know the concrete people you're dealing with and what they're about. And when they tell you they're fascist, and you got to believe them, and you got to react accordingly. You got to respond accordingly. Anyway, we have to continue. The future is still bright. We have to just get organized and continue to organize. I notice it's the people of God, the people of God, the children of God who seem to have the consciousness to vote, and the people who are atheists seem to be aloof and just intellectually progressive. But when it comes to practically putting the theory to practice, there's a void between self-determination and independence and taking control of one's destiny. And just somehow they just don't grasp what's going on. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlo. Sound like you're going to raise another issue to spread the people more around the question of world religion and spirituality. But let's move on to get the response from caller 7236. 7236, what our future may look like. The mic is yours, 7236.
Well, I would like, thank you so much for allowing me to speak. My name is Eleanor Johnson, and I'd like to thank Sister Brenda and all of the speakers. They are fantastic. The reality is that we made a big mistake by not voting. The people who didn't vote voted for Trump. A failure to vote is to vote for Trump. And he is a fascist. He did tell you what he was going to do. He did tell you that he was going to eliminate the EPA. He did tell you that he did not support the Palestinians. He did tell you that he was going to eliminate the Pentagon. He did tell you he wanted to change the Constitution. He told you who he was. And some people just set up and they're Trump empathizers because they decided not to vote for Pamela because she didn't take the right stands and wasn't proactive enough for the Palestinians. But, you know, look what we're ending up with. A congressman who resigned from office is now going to be the attorney general of state as a sex pedophile. And a money launderer is your secretary of general. And the guy that's taking over the interior is a white supremacist. So voting, Malcolm said it, is the ballot or the bullet. And Trump and the guy that's taking over the interior isn't worrying about wars abroad, talking about pulling the military out on us. He's talking about getting rid of all the generals that aren't just going to obey Trump blindly and support the Constitution. Voting is an essential tool, as the last speaker said, for the Democrats, the Republicans, the communists, the socialists. We have to know when to unite and unite around the polls. Now we have a fascist. God knows what's going to happen. And I don't have any religious, I'm not going to say because the Muslims in Michigan didn't vote for Pamela. But look where Donald Trump wants to set up his new prison. Georgia, home place of black people outside of Atlanta. Philadelphia, home place of black people. Michigan, home place of black people and first and second and third generation Muslims. This is no coincidence. So I thank Sister Brenda for, you know, waking people up and just reminding people who didn't vote that when they didn't vote, they voted for Trump. A no vote is a vote for Trump. I hope they're happy with their selection. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. As you can tell, different people have different perspectives on their understanding of their realities. You can go back to Sister Brenda. Sister Brenda, we're coming back to you. Are there any other things you'd like to share on what you heard and on the thing?
I do. First of all, I think I want to thank all the callers. You did a magnificent job of what you had to say. And, you know, I do know Donald and Donald Robinson and Tina Richmond up in Fredericksburg. And the work that Donald does, and this is a must, the work that Donald Robinson is doing up there in Fredericksburg with these kids, with Tina and Richmond, is unimaginable. And so I want to thank Donald for calling in because I know that what he has been doing in educating those kids and what he has brought forth to those kids over the years. So I want to thank Donald for what he had to say. There's a number of different, everybody. The last caller, everybody has just been spot on what they're saying. This is not a joke. We got to be very serious. One of the other callers was talking about, I want to give you all some numbers. I have been extremely involved with this campaign. And I have met Kamala Harris on multiple occasions. Kamala Harris is exactly what you saw. She is a very down-to-earth person. She is not fake. She's very real. And everything she say is very genuine. And I've had that opportunity. And I know most of you have not, had the opportunity, but I have. So, but I think we're going to have to remember something. That woman only had 107 days to run a campaign. And let me tell you something. She did a beautiful job. She did a beautiful job in 107 days. It takes 4 years to run a campaign. When a president is elected, if they are running again, they start. They put that transition team is still in place, and they are running it for the following year to put that person back in place. She only had 107 days. And let me tell you, And for those on this call, if you have not heard or read the book, The Four Color Girls, Lee Daughtry, Donna Brazile, Mignon Moore, and I'm sorry, I cannot think of the list. They are the ones that backed that campaign. They are the chair. They are in charge of that Democratic, that Democratic convention. They put that convention on. I was there. It was flawless. So I'm gonna tell you all something. We had black queens that ran that entire convention, and I'm telling you, Jamie Harrison definitely needs to go. See, I will call you out. Jamie Harrison is at the top of the Democrats, needs to go. Definitely. He is. He definitely needs to go. But let me tell you something. There was a lot of hard work on everybody's part, of all of us that worked in that campaign, worked on that campaign, and know what it takes. And let me tell you something else. Let me tell you some numbers that y'all is just going to truly blow you away. Okay, that election was a lot closer than you all ever imagined. And I wanted to, I know the call is 605. I want to give you some numbers that you're not going to believe. Do you know between Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, the two blue wall states that she needed? Because we got to remember now, it's Electoral College is what we got to get rid of. And the Democrats, everybody has been working on that, but one of the calls is exactly right. Democratic Party, we got to remember the history of the Democratic Party. Democratic Party did not come in as the party to help those that are less fortunate. They did not come in this way. Frederick Douglass, Republican Party, people will say, talk about Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass wouldn't even be in the Republican Party today. So we always got to remember the times. So this is the time, and the Democratic Party is on our side in this time. But let me tell you about those two states. She didn't need but those two states. Between those two states, the number that she needed between two states was 250,000 votes. That's it. She missed it by 250,000 votes. That's all between those two states. She would be president right now. It was that close. So we did not win. I mean, we did not lose. America lost. And I was so glad that the last caller talked about who he put a Fox host in charge of the Pentagon. And she's right. They coming after us. Somebody that these people are not even qualified. You got Matt Gaetz, the attorney general, the highest office, law officer in this nation. Matt Gaetz, like she said, a pedophile. Like she said, he resigned so that he wouldn't be, because of that report that was coming out. He resigned 2 days before, just a couple of days ago, and then he was named by Donald Trump. He is now being named. And let's not forget, as of today, the Senate is already Republican. As of today, just before this show started, now the Republican got the House and the Senate. The House and the Senate. So guess what? Anything Donald Trump wants, Donald Trump will get. We are in trouble. This position to hear for black folk, let me tell you something. They've already talked about, yes, racial profiling. So you better understand right now, that's going to start back. Doesn't matter. Yo, black people will be racially profiled. Don't think that they're not looking at us. Donald Trump made it clear, just like she said. He already told us what he's going to do. He talked about his pretty white skin. See, we are not off the table.
Hey, Brenda, I'd like to raise this question with you and the rest of the participants today. And I think it's a issues where we got to continue to have a serious discussion as we begin to try to figure out which way forward. Now, when you look at the political system and the two-party system in this country, the illusion of the two-party system in the country, based upon my understanding of the history of this country, it's really interesting in terms of both of these parties have been working together under the capacity that every 20 years they have to vote for the right for African people to vote. Why is this condition existing if we are perceived to be citizens of this so-called nation? Why are we the only group every 20 years they have to vote to see if we have the right to vote?
You said why every 20 years?
Yeah, every 20 years. At least 20 years they have to vote to give African people the right to vote. And if we are already citizens, why is it this particular peculiar statute is only applied to us and nobody else? What does that say in terms of how these two parties see African people in this country?
Well, of course, as you know, in history, they've never seen us as a whole. They've never seen us as a whole. And even right now, and what we would better understand, even Mr. Ruff, I think that's a great question. Even right now, all that rights has already been taken as civil rights. Supreme Court have already struck down as civil rights. We got no civil rights for education. All of that's been struck down already. Then you got people that now they gonna dismantle all of that. But they have never seen us as a whole. So everything that we have fought for, it's already been stripped down. We've already gone back. We've already allowed them because what rights we did have, and that's why I said in the beginning. I've had too many brothers and sisters that have fought and died, so we can't have these rights. We did. There was the protest and the fight and standing up for justice and speaking out that we've had in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s, in the early 2000s. It's gone. And it does start a lot with our young people now. Because, see, this is the sad part. All of this is going to be left up to our young people. And guess what? Guess what? Our young people have not been educated. I educate my boys. Both my boys have both been educated. They both understand our history. But I can't tell you how many kids have not, and we have left our kids in such a bad way. We have left our grandkids in such a bad way in this country. But no, it's a great question. But they've never seen us as a whole. They've never wanted us to vote. They've always this is the way it was going to be for us. It was always going to be a tax. It's no different than, look, what do we have to do for poll taxes? Property ownership requirements. Come on. It was always a test for us. And then we get the opportunity. We have the opportunity. But we want to believe in misinformation and disinformation. And we don't want to understand that, because let me tell you something. The Republicans will hold their nose. No matter how bad it is, they'll hold their nose and they'll vote. Even though that they can look at somebody that got 34 counts of a felony, that have a civil case of raping a woman, and then he owed her millions of dollars that he ain't even paid yet. Eugene Carroll. And then New York $400,000+ on the scams that he did there. But guess what? In my opinion, he should have never been able to run for president with all those felons. But guess what? We got brothers and sisters right now sitting in prison, have died in prison for crimes that they never even committed. And then we got, when you got somebody like Matt Gaetz, and I got brothers and I got brother and family members that still calling me to try to get their family members out. As of January the 20th, we got no allies. That's the problem. That's it right there. I have no allies. So this is what we're going to have to do, and this is what we're going to have to come back to. We're going to have another show where we're going to have to start talking about going back to the local level is where it starts. If we don't start putting people in our school boards, because all our books have been banned out of the schools, that is about us. Glenn Youngkin, there are, I forget, the millions of books that's already been put on a book ban. Glenn, Virginia schools are failing, even though they changed the numbers just last week. But Glenn Youngkin has made it possible, and other governors did it. The Republican governors around this country have did it. Glenn Youngkin went from county to county to county and just gave them carte blanche that if one parent go to a school board meeting and complain and say, I don't want that book, pull it off the shelf. And guess what? The school's got to pull it off the shelf. Glenn Youngkin have done that. So we don't just vote for somebody because they sound good. But that's what Glenn Youngkin, that Republican Glenn Youngkin did. But let me be very clear. Abigail Spanberger is who the Democrats put up for governor for next year. I'm not voting for her either. She don't know us. She don't talk to us. She don't come into our community. She don't communicate with us. And one thing that I will no longer tolerate is that they use all the black mayors and the black politicians within those districts is to bring her in into the black community and bring black people in so they can listen to her crap so we can vote for her. No, not happening. And I'm gonna talk to the black women, and because as we know, black women vote in huge numbers about why we cannot support Abigail Spanberger. And I have said to the Democratic Party of Virginia, which also is a racist white woman for the chairman and Schweitzer, see, I will call you out. I don't have a problem because they are staying. I'm going to stand for what I stand for, or I'll fall for anything. I'm not going to fall for nothing. Because I can stand for it because it's fact and it's true. So I know we do need to come back, and we need to talk about how we need to proceed to move forward from this point on. Because we do have Virginia have an election every year. And we got to start talking about those that are already sitting in office, warm, keeping that seat warm, thinking their name is on it, not doing any work, and then expecting our vote without doing anything in our communities. That must stop. If you can't tell us what you have done in our community, you're not just working in our community. I understand that. But tell me what you've done in our community. I know what you've done across the state, but if you ain't done nothing in our community, I can tell you that. So those are the things that we need to talk about moving forward. And guess what, Mr. Robinson? You need to get them on the show, and if they don't show up, we call them out on that. They need to be on your platform, too. And we got a black lieutenant governor who's from Jamaica, raised in New York, went to the military, came to Virginia. She's at racist governor Youngkin, lieutenant governor. Of course, he didn't even campaign with her. And of course, the Republicans gonna vote for her anyway. They got her in. Now she, because she's black, she running for governor because they strategic. They good at it now. So they figure that, hey, Virginia may vote for her because they didn't vote for Kamala, but we're gonna get her in. That's what the Republicans are thinking. And they said the black women that already made it, because let's remember one thing. The white women is who got Donald Trump in office. White women grinned up in our faces. 54% of white women voted for Donald Trump. And let's talk about real quick the immigration population, the Hispanic population. 55% of men, we're going to break it down, 55% of Hispanic men voted for Donald Trump, but 48% of Hispanic women voted for Kamala Harris. But it was the white, It was more than 91% of white men that voted for Trump. So it was the white vote. Because there was more white women that voted for Hillary Clinton than they voted for Kamala. The white women and the white men, they did not want a black woman. Let's be very clear on that. It's not that the campaign didn't do what they could in 107 days. And let's keep that on the forefront. 107 days, that woman did a magnificent job. She can't hit every single thing every time. But she did a magnificent job. In 107 days, he had 8 years. He was running for 8 years. She had 107 days. And she still could have won that. If that woman had another 107 days, we'd be having another conversation. There's no doubt in my mind about that. If she had only another 100 days to run her campaign. And then when you got Hispanics, that think that there was one family out of Arizona that was interviewed and they voted for Donald Trump, and they and it was one of the reporters questioned them and said, well, what do you say? Well, I wasn't going to vote for him at first, but I voted for him. And they asked the father, well, yeah, he's going to get rid of what do you think about him deporting? Oh, he's not going to bother us. He's getting rid of all the bad people. No, boo. See, when you are undocumented, we ain't break no laws. See, when you are undocumented, that is breaking the law. So you going too. So when you get that knock on your door, because you undocumented, you going too. And see, where they already strategically thinking is they can take the head of the household first, and then rest them with self-deport. They're already strategically thinking. This is what we're gonna start. They've already started in the detention centers. They deported those already in the detention centers. And then they go on, and then as soon as they go in office, they're going to start deporting head of households that don't have that undocumented. So now the women, the Hispanic women are furious because a lot of them are undocumented and their husbands are also undocumented. But they couldn't vote anyway. But their family members that could vote, because see, they couldn't vote. The undocumented people could not vote. Let's be very clear about that. They couldn't vote. But Hispanic women that are undocumented, they are furious. Because they already understood. But it was the men that, for some reason, that could vote, they voted for Donald Trump. So let's be very clear. A lot of people say it was Hispanics, but it was actually white men and white women that did not want a black woman in office. And Hispanic people, for some reason, felt that if they voted for Donald Trump, Donald Trump would not deport them. And I know that because of my work, I spoke with a lot of Hispanic men, that could vote. And that was something that they shared with me. And I'm like, okay. But it doesn't work that way. And so, but yeah, you know, and I think a lot of families also felt threatened. A lot of Hispanic families felt threatened that if they didn't vote for Donald Trump, that their family members would be deported. So they did feel that if they did, they'll feel safer. But it doesn't work like that. As long as you are undocumented in this country, you're going. It doesn't matter. And that's the bottom line. And it doesn't stop at Hispanics. It also stops at anybody else. Just like the Haitian population that in Springfield that he targeted, it stops at, it doesn't stop there. It stops at a little bit of everybody. It's all nationalities. That's the bottom line, except the white ones. Except the white ones. He's not going to deport them. They fine. They got nothing to worry about. But I know that time has run out. But I do want to say this. I want to reiterate something that you said. I definitely want to bring this up, especially to the listeners, which was extremely important. Especially those that I know, I want to encourage you. I put it on all my Facebook, on my Facebook, Brenda Coles, and please come out to the meet and greet with David Montrose, with the book signing and reception, he's an author with the Stolen Wealth of Slavery, A Case for Reparations. The admission is free. It's going to be Thursday, November 26th from 6 to 8 p.m. At the Richmond Library at 101 East Franklin Street in Richmond. Please come out because this is a great topic. We need to be talking. This is someone that I have heard and I'm looking forward to it. I'm definitely going to be there. But please come out. And I just want to bring that back up. I think this is very important that we do support this. Also, I want to ask
Brenda, can I stop you one second to make one quick little correction? I think the correct date should be November the 21st, this upcoming Thursday.
I'm sorry. What did I say?
You said the 26th. Okay. November the
21st.
Oh, okay?
Yeah, I meant the 21st. Yes, yes. Yeah, definitely. Thursday, November the 21st. I do apologize that from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. So I definitely want to encourage, I did put this post on my Facebook. So I would encourage you to please go out and please come out on the 21st, on Thursday the 21st, and support this. I'm also asking everybody that's listening to this today, I appreciate the callers. You're absolutely fantastic. But I also want to ask you, what Mr. Robinson does with Missing Pages in his district, please support him. Please contribute to this program. You know, any and everything helps when you are having a program such as this. And I want to ask everybody, please make a contribution to these programs, because the way that we have to remember that we have to keep these programs going is that we have to contribute to them. And this is our investment. Let's remember that. This is our investment. And we don't look at it as, you know, I don't want to. No. If you want to continue to hear what it is that we need to hear, that is fact-based, truth-based information. It's an investment for us. And so I just want to ask you, please, to you know, whatever contribution you can make to Missing Pages in History, please do that. So, and of course, Mr. Robinson, I hope I didn't go too far with that. You can give out the information on how to be able to do that. But I want to thank you for allowing me to be on the show. I absolutely love it. I certainly like to be able to come back to talk about the candidates for next year, which is extremely important because we got the governor, we got the attorney general, Virginia attorney general, which is the, in my opinion, is even a higher position than the governor because they over, just like the attorney general for that they picked that crazy Matt Gaetz, the attorney general that is running for Virginia. I have my pick, and I know who she is, and I know she would do us a great job, and I know she would love to come on the show, and her name is Shannon Taylor. So, and because I know her and I know what she's done for our community, because I can speak on it. And anytime I can speak on what she's done for our community, and we do have a brother that's running, and I'm familiar with the brother too. But I know what she has done for our community. So we need to start talking about these things so people can be really understand what it is that we actually know about these people and what we can kind of expect. So, and what these roles are. People don't understand the huge position that we are putting people in. The Attorney General position oversees DOC, housing, it oversees so much in this entire state. And we got to have somebody that is approachable. The difference. If I can't have somebody approachable, the brother that's running is not, although I know him, it's not just an approachable brother. You know, you got to know somebody that's got to get over to him. I can't deal with folk that is not approachable. And I know she's approachable because she reached out to me in situations. And even in a situation I had, she reached out to me to say, I would love to sit down and talk with you about what I understand that happened. So, when people can do that, and I've been knowing her for some years, I've been knowing her brother for some years. So, but I want to be able to, for us to talk about these things, we really need to have some clear understanding on who we need to be, and let's listen to them. Let's listen to what they say before we make those decisions and say, hey, I'm glad you came out. We needed to hear this. And this is why, Mr. Robinson, you need to reach out to these people. I can give you the information. Reach out to these people. Invite them on. Let's ask some hard questions. Ain't gonna not be prepped. Let's ask some of them hard questions. If they can't answer them, then we know. Okay, I'm through.
it sounds like a plan. Sounds like a plan, my sister. But let me just share a couple of things with our listening audience. For those who may be interested in supporting the work of MPH or MPH Radio, would you please, you can contact us by emailing us and you'd like to be a supporter or you'd like to make a donation. Just email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. mphradio@yahoo.com. Or you can call and leave a message at 804-683-9174. That's 804-683-9174. Or just email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. And we'll get back with you and tell you how you can best support us. But more than support, you need to become, help build this institution. We're looking for writers, speakers, researchers, people in the community that will be our reporters, not just here, but globally throughout the world. So come and help MPH Radio. So we're coming to the end of time on 17th day of November 2024. Our theme was what our future may look like. We'd like to thank our special guest, Sister Brenda Coase, who has four decades of advocacy for civil rights. She's a community activist. And of course, you can tell she's a freedom fighter, fighting for our people, justice, and equality. We'd like to thank her. We'd like to thank all our participants. We'd like to thank Brother Alex for his co-hosting. And what we're going to ask Brother Alex to do is we've asked him to say a few words, a message to the community. Then I have one, two other announcements. And we'll be seeing y'all in 2 weeks, same time, same station, on MPH Radio. In 2 weeks, our next program will be November the 30th, at 1 p.m., so put that in your calendar. So we're going to take a quick station break, and when we come back, Brother Alex, you're going to do your message to the community when we return. You listen to MPH Radio.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
MPH Radio. At this point in time, we're bringing Brother Addis back. He's going to give up a message to the community. Then we'll make an announcement, and then we'll continue to travel down the road of liberation. Brother Addis, what is your message to the community?
Well, again, I don't want to be repetitive, but then I do. Mr. Lee, wonderful show today. Sister Brenda, wonderful commentary. And I wish we do invite you back, because I've learned an awful lot today. And that's what's so important, that we continue the station and we continue to support Mr. Lee. And so, Brother Lee, even though I can't be there, I will be sending you a little bit to make sure that I get a couple of those books. So make sure that I get them signed. And you send them to North Carolina, because if I didn't have a doctor's appointment, brother, I would be there. But I can't get another appointment to further in the next year, so I got to be there this time. But anyway, what I would like to say is these past 2 weeks have left many Democrats angered, confused, disappointed, fearful, disrespected, abandoned, and without any hope of a better America. Yet, I have seen a sense of joy and pride filled with hate and retribution from the people on the other side, called Republicans, who proudly displayed the rebel flag in the nation's capital, the People's House, on January 6, 2020. Though I support the Democrat Party and its views on certain politics, the other party has none, except to stay out of prison, steal from the nation, disrupt social programs, deport legal immigrants, and rule the country with lies and mischief, and to bring back the white privileged nation policies of a new Jim Crow era against the people of color. The whole world watched and saw the best and worst of American politics. The best was a youthful, qualified, intelligent, brilliant woman who, president, stood for change to make America more equal and more justified in the way it governed itself. All issues, health care, housing, and economics. A better America was her plan, to build bridges, to build homes, to build the economy, to build pride, and to build faith in one another. To anchor in a new America where race or being a female did not matter, as finally the doors were to be opened equally for all citizens, regardless of the past fringes of racism that would have been abandoned but lay in waiting. The worst of America had been boasted by Mr. Trump since he worked with his father denying housing for the people of color in New York. His insistence that the innocent Central Park Five men of color to be found guilty and given the death penalty. That President Obama was not a U.S. citizen, causing Obama to show the world that he was. To uphold the views of the KKK, the Proud Boys, and the Oath Keepers, and others who symbolize his love for white supremacy and their actions against the people of color. A convicted rapist who bragged about his sexual assaults on women. A man who committed adultery multiple times, even when his wives were pregnant. A man who was convicted of fraud and found to be a felon, had no shame to run for the highest office in the land. As the slave song Dixie played at Madison Square Garden at his rally, the Republicans had found their king. America's return to the outhouse. We learned that the Israelites and Samuel to appoint a king to govern them. Like all other nations, their request displeased Samuel, who warned the people that kings lay heavy burdens on a nation. That people of Israel could declare to Samuel, "You are old, and your sons do not follow your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all other nations have." Samuel prayed to the Lord, who tells him to warn the people solemnly and to let them know that the king who will reign over them will claim as his rights. He will take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and horses, and they will run in front of his chariots. Some he will assign as commanders of many, and others to plow the ground and reap his harvest, and still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be performers and cooks and bakers. He will take your best vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to the officials and attendants, your male and female servants, and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. When the day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. The people refused to God's words. And he went to the Lord again, and God answered, "Listen to them and give them a king. Fools cannot be taught even when it's before their eyes." They
Jesse Jackson, the civil rights activist of the Democratic National Convention, and this was his first campaign for president of the United States of America. He began with a blending of America, the blanket he and his brother slept under when young that his grandmother made. He called her a master weaver, who stitched together rags and tattered pieces of old coats to keep them warm at night. He told of how his mother came down to the front of the church and apologized for him being born out of wedlock. How his grandmother brought him home on Thanksgiving from the white people's houses she worked at to feed them. Then how he looked down at her hands that had once picked cotton was now picking her grandson as president. Finally, he spoke of how the people of color had made it a reality to be denied. We have come from the outhouse of society to run for the White House. It is said that many in white America cried that night as Jesse made it real, that being black and poor in the richest nation in the world was by design of man, not God. We as a nation must be better than that. In 1988, Kennedy Jackson campaigned again. Run, Jesse, run, was his slogan. He stood on the stage where only a few blocks away in Atlanta, Georgia, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. lay in eternal peace for the ages. Keep hope alive, was his motto at the 1988 convention, as again he knew he would not run and win. But he cautioned America's conscience again. And the audience before him was red, yellow, brown, black, and white, all precious in God's sight, the real Rainbow Coalition. This is Dr. King's dream to see us together, not separate in hate and fear for each other. Jackson talked of a common ground that no longer exists in America. America's now full of indecent and common criminals. A greed for wealth and power that has all but destroyed the good people of America as the bad are held above the justice system, a system that is no longer just, but corrupt. Common sense has been replaced by thousands of unfounded lies and misinformation that surrounds us every day. He spoke of true leadership and equal rights for all, that the poor was not lazy or on welfare, but disenfranchised over the opportunity to succeed and only needed a hand up, not a look down and criticism. He talked of morality and character, which the nation now abandoned like in the days of Samuel. Today, I implore you from all over the world, as Jesse Jackson did. So many are in despair that only the white, rich, and wealthy can do as they please. But their day will come. They may call you an outcast, low down. You can't make it. You are nothing. You are from nobody. You are subclass or underclass, low IQ, the N-word, handicapped, or suckers and losers of the military. But you are all God's children. What is on the bottom will rise to the top. Hold your head up when you walk. Stick out your chest when you walk outside. Feel confident and proud. I am somebody. We will make it by the grace of God. It may get dark sometimes, but every morning the light shines to let us know that everything will be all right. Suffering brings character. Character breeds faith. In the end, faith will not disappoint. You must not surrender to evil and hate. You must always know that you are not only qualified, but sanctified in his name. And hold out. Hold on. We must never stop or forget the struggle that millions have died for. The right to vote, to protest, to live, exist in this country is our right, paid for by the blood of our ancestors. The only king we need is ourselves. Let us close the door on the White House or the outhouse in D.C., as it will smell very bad for the next 4 years. Again, I thank you, Brother Lee, for giving me this opportunity.
We thank you, like always, Billy Alex, for your contribution to this program and all the others. We'd like to thank again our special guest, Sister Brenda Coles, for her contribution, and, of course, the participants and you, the listening audience, for allowing us to come in your homes this evening. Big truth to the powerful and the powerless. We'd like to remind you of a historical significance again on this day of the 16th of November in 1972. Police murdered two African students at Southern University at Baton Rouge, Louisiana, during peaceful demonstration that took place in 1972 on this day. Let's not forget our history because our struggles continue. We also want to remind everyone who may be in the Richmond metropolitan area of the state of Virginia, you can listen to and watch Mr. Page's History TV program every weekend on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays by going to Channel 95 on Comcast Cablevision and 36 on Verizon Cable Company. You can look at these shows at 1 a.m. on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. So check out the programs. Again, our next program will be 2 weeks from now, Saturday, November 30th. Put that on your chart. And for those who like to support MPH Radio and even become an active member of MPH Radio, please write us at mphradio@yahoo.com. mphradio@yahoo.com. And we can tell you the best way how you can support us and also become a part of us. So until next time, as we think about this question, what our future may look like, I think there are some other questions we need to think about and come to some collective understanding based upon the use of our history and the correctness of our history. And when we say which way forward, I think we must ask the question, can there truly be true equality and respect and sharing of power when you're in a party of multimillionaires versus a party of people who have no capital at all? Can no two relationships exist in a party equally and respectfully? You must come to ask yourself, what is our position on the land question? Where does Africa fit in? Understand that the only way a true people can be free is they must have a land base. Show me a people no land, and I'll show you a promise. When will we intensify the connection? I'm looking at that relationship of a liberated Africa. We'll liberate Africans wherever we may be. We come and ask this question. When you function under a political economic system called capitalism, and understand its history and its first contact with us, it enslaved us. Do we truly believe that whatever party that functions today will be a party that will be capable of getting us out of our suffering? These are just some of the questions we are raising with diverse communities and with our people, that we must come to answer it collectively. As Brother Harold Cruz wrote the book, The Crisis Among Negro Intellectuals, what choices will we make to go forward and be free? Think about it. We'd like to thank everyone again for allowing us to come home. This has been the missing page of history as relates to what our future may look like on the 17th day of November 2024. We thank you and we leave everybody with some music or inspiration. We'll see you on the 30th. And don't forget to come out and support the program, the book signing on November 21st with Brother David Marino at the Richmond City Public Library, 101 East Franklin Street, Richmond, Virginia, 23219. That Thursday, November 21st. The time is from 6 to 8 p.m. We thank you. And let's continue. Subscribe to our Feeling It Now, Missing Pages of History.
get some we never had. Let's start with a good dad. So real, but it's so sad. And while we burning this incense, we gon' pray for the innocent. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about Chi-Town. Let's talk about Gaza. Let's talk about Israel. Right now with Israel. Let's talk Nigeria in a mass hysteria. Yeah, our souls are brought together so that we could love each other, brother. We in the nation, we're no support for education, cause right now it don't make sense, right now it don't make sense, let's talk about our part, my heart touch your heart, let's talk about living, had enough of dying, that's what we all about, let's do more giving, do more forgiving, yeah, our souls are brought together so that we could love each other, sisters, we profits. My hope is that this book will tell a new story about slavery,
one showing that its epic wealth was not limited to the South, nor to plantations, nor to a certain period of time, but is instead all around us. For those who truly profited from slavery built our largest banks and corporations, corporations that are the living vessel of viciously stolen wealth that still survives. I also hope my book, by exposing the role of corporations in slavery, can jumpstart a conversation that corporations have a tremendous debt to pay to Black people through reparations. I also hope that if you enjoy reading, you will tell a friend or 10 and share your thoughts on social media.
We'd like to thank all of the supporting groups to make this
event. Asterisk special thanks. Richmond Public Library /RPL, PA Roots, NPH TV and Radio. For contact info and RSVP to Missing Pages of History, 1@yahoo.com, Missing Pages of History, 1@yahoo.com, or call 804-683-9174 if you're planning to attend this reception. The doors will open at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. NPH, thank you. Event, reception, book lunch, and signing. Venue, Richmond Public Library, Auditorium.
101 E Franklin St., Richmond, 23,219 volt ampere.
Date, Thursday, November 21st, 2024. Time, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Missing Pages of History Incorporated /MPH Inc.
We would like to thank all of the supporting groups to make this program possible on the 21st and 22nd. We'd like to thank Western Memorial United Methodist Church, PA Roots, MPH TV and Radio, and of course, the Richmond Public Library. You have been listening to MPH Radio.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.